Guru Nation, welcome to episode 861 of Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. In this episode, I interview Keon Wilson. He is a managing director for Sunshine Research Solutions. He's someone who's relatively new to site ownership. He has an interesting career. Not only is he a retired NFL linebacker, but he also, after his NFL career, transitioned into medical device sales, and that eventually got him into site ownership. And in this episode, we kind of take a deep dive into all things related to site ownership, including managing the site, some of the more innovative things he's done as far as patient recruitment and retention. There's a lot of nuggets in this one. So make sure that you are tuned in, taking notes. Make sure you connect with Keon. His link to his LinkedIn is underneath the show notes. And really quick, I wanted to thank our sponsors, Inato. Speaking of getting studies for your site, Inato is an amazing place to do that. They are also an SOS sponsor, which is Save Our Site sponsor, which Keon will be at in March of 2025 in Oklahoma City. Inato is completely free. They do not get involved in any aspect of your trial or management or budget or anything. They're just strictly a platform where sponsors can find sites and they make all their revenue from the sponsors. Also, another sponsor for the podcast is Creo, who will also be a Save Our Sites sponsor. And there's a lot of exciting things coming from Creo. They are an eSource, eReg, CTMS, eConsent, patient database. There's so much going on. Record retrieval service. There's a lot going on. You only pay for what you use. And Creo has really been day one. I've been using it for my site at Yuma Clinical Trials. It really is helpful and it really brings to the forefront your capabilities as far as being a site director or a site owner. So check it out. Link to Creo underneath the show notes and also check them out at SOS. And with that being said, enjoy this episode with Keon. Guru Nation, thank you so much for watching. Make sure you like, subscribe, comment, share. We got a special episode today. Keon Wilson, he used to play football. He was in the NFL. Now he's in our industry. People in our industry come from all walks of life. Clearly, people stumble into it. He ended up having a career in medical device sales, I believe. Is that correct? After. Now he's a site owner. Sunshine Clinical.
Sunshine Research Solutions.
Sunshine Research Solutions. I'm so bad with names, man. But we got to get into why you decided to start the site. And then we'll just spend the rest getting through the nitty-gritty of being a startup site owner because. Honestly, that's my favorite kind of guest to talk to. We are all. I like creating sites and then building them to a certain point where they need management. I'm almost here now at the Yuma Clinical Trial and 3 years in. I start to not like it when you need to manage it. Like, I like to build it, build systems, and then have people kind of manage, have a management layer. I like the stage that you're in right now. It's like my sweet spot. But thanks so much for coming on, Keon. I really appreciate it.
No problem, Dan. Thank you for having
So what got you into all this mess, man? First of all, hold on. Compare this owning a site to being an NFL linebacker. What's harder?
Two completely different ends of the spectrum.
You
One's a
get
lot
hit
of
in the head
fun.
on both of them, though.
That is true, and you lose sleep on both of them as
You
well.
lose sleep on both. Damn. Which one's more sustainable? 'Cause obviously, I know the answer. Which one do you enjoy more, like waking up in the morning and going to work?
That's a very difficult one.
I know. That's why I asked him.
So I'll give you an answer from both perspectives. For myself personally, I've always felt like I had a greater calling and where I wanted to make a meaningful impact. Playing sports allowed me to do that just as a mentorship or something that children and young adults could aspire to be. So being able to use that platform and mentor or do the Great American Teach-Ins or just kind of motivate young individuals, I stood very proud knowing that I was able to offer that. But with the clinical research, I feel like there's such a greater opportunity, being that there's so many therapeutic areas that we can focus on. And as the industry change, we can continue to adapt. We can bring on new PIs. We can transform our site a little bit. So say, for instance, right now, we're not in the oncology space, but we know that that's the mecca, right? We know that that is the bane of existence within the research industry. So starting out in the therapeutic areas that we are, such as derm or asthma, immunology, and then eventually shifting our focus to a much greater population that's affected, that's something that I stand strongly on, and I'm really excited about that.
That was like a be on the post game podium interview reply. Listen, Keon, when I talk to MAs, medical assistants, CNAs at all my sites, man, I am knowing what I know. It's hard for me not to try to be an ambassador for them. Like, hey, do you realize, like, I'm not supposed to tell you this, but do you realize you could be a coordinator and like double your salary? Like, I kind of tell them this stuff. And they just look at me and they're like, yeah, but I don't know what you guys do. I see you here, but you guys just do weird stuff. You spend like 4 hours with a patient. You know, we spend like 5 minutes with a patient. They don't get it. But there's the transferable skills are there. And to me, it's like frustrating that I can't hire them all or at least teach them all. And part of the mission of my channel now, besides teaching people how to like start sites and manage sites, is to look at this as a career option, right? And so I'm going to ask you for, as far as like retired athletes, you know, you've been around colleagues. My brother's a basketball coach for D1, University of North Carolina, Charlotte. So he works with athletes. I think there's a lot of transferable skills. From your experiences, like how many of you, like former athletes, do you think could actually do a good job as site owners? Like just percentage wise.
Man,
Because they all
that's
retire and get into something else. Like, okay,
right.
broadcasting, you know, journalism, just random things. Like, knowing what you know, the transferable skills are there. I think you have to be somewhat outgoing as an athlete because somehow they're all extroverts, right? Or is that a myth?
You're forced into that role, right? I'll use Jameis Winston as an example, right? The guy has been. And I say it all the time. No one, he signed up to play football, right? He didn't sign up to be a mentor. He didn't sign up to be a role model. He didn't sign up to be looked up to. That just comes with the nature of that position that you're playing. So over time, you adapt. And fortunately, the NFL, they have a specific position within the organization, which is like director of player development. And they help you with these things. They help you with public speaking. They help you with being able to coaching you with interview skills. They help you with networking opportunities. So there's so many different things that's there, so many different elements to making you who you are.
Because so in a small town like Yuma, but like, you know, let's say Tampa, right? Which is not a small town, but it's a smaller market. People know you, like hardcore fans, they know you. Oh, yeah, I remember, you know, especially when you just retire. A lot of what I do now is community outreach, right? Like I go out to local businesses. Hey, you know, you're the local taco shop owner. Like, let's do a podcast. Can I put flyers here? We have studies. I feel like it would be easier for you. Like a former athlete, like there's a lot of advantages you have. A lot of people think a lot of money, right? But that depends how long you've played and what you did with it. But I think the notoriety and the brand is even more powerful.
Absolutely. So, if you're preparing properly for life after football, I think the transition would be seamless, right? If you, while you're in the NFL, it's so easy to grow your followings, right? You're on Monday, like you do an interview with a reporter and you go, oh, by the way, follow me on Instagram, and right, the platform that you have can reach so many people. And if you're preparing yourself properly for that transition out of football, you grow your social media presence, you start to brand yourself. And then that way, when you are ready to make that transition, you have that platform and people come to you for opportunities, right? You see Instagram models or you see fitness influencers. People are paying them to post on their page. So being able to leverage that platform. But to answer your question on what percent of athletes, I think it's all about the team you build around you, right? Like we know our right-hand man or woman in this space is so critical. So finding that person and being able to get that going, I'd say maybe 30 to 40% of guys could potentially do it.
See, and there, that's like, yeah. And how many actually do, like, former athletes get into research? Like, very few, like 1%, if that,
If that.
which is pretty similar numbers to how many doctors do research, I think. So, yeah, we need to do a better job of just highlighting the opportunities here. I think, part of the success I've had is like explaining to other people, and I've seen other podcasters starting to do the same thing in our space. I was just curious what you thought about that. Have you been able to leverage your celebrity to some extent in your community, like for your site?
To be honest, I'm like a little bashful when it comes to that. Like, I don't
You don't lead
prefer.
with that.
No. I think it's like the icing on the cake. Like, oh, by the way, this is right. I want you to like me for who I am. I want to get in front of you and win these relationships, or kind of, win your likeness for who I am as a person, and then let that be the bonus to it. But some guys, they're when you have that notoriety behind your name, it'll open so many doors for you.
I could see that. Okay, so when you started your site, so Matt, you retired from the NFL. By the way, linebacker, that's like the leader of the defense, I
Yes,
think,
sir.
right? More or less.
Correct.
Your guys are the ones with the on the defensive side with the mic or with the speaker in your helmet, right? The linebacker. So you kind of understand like leadership from that's a transferable skill. You retired and you started doing medical device sales right away.
Correct. Correct. So I started selling durable medical equipment, which is oxygen walkers, wheelchairs, CPAPs, BiPAPs. I did very well at that. It was a smaller company. And I knew I wanted to be more clinical, more hands-on with patients. So I put some feelers out and I interviewed with Stryker Spine. I ended up landing with Stryker and I was there for 7 years. There, I marketed to orthopedic surgeons and neurosurgeons. I got them to agree to use my product and then I accompanied them in surgery. So we was performing spine surgeries due to several different reasons, either degenerative disc, trauma related, scoliosis, several different therapeutics areas, or several different modalities on why we were performing surgeries. Did very well. Was had a Stryker is a very, very prestigious organization, and they're known for the sales training that they invest into their sales reps. So it's kind of like I'll give the analogy like Steelers defense, right? If you can learn the
Dang,
Steelers
that's the
defense,
culture.
if right, that, right? So coming from an organization like Stryker, every week you're being poached by smaller companies. Other people are reaching out to you. So it's that caliber of a company to work for. And I was very fortunate to stay in the hometown. Like a lot of people don't know how competitive the medical device industry is, and let alone spine. Spine is one of the more lucrative of the devices to sell, but it is very, very laborsome. That some of our surgeries were 8, 10, 12 hours at times, and we have to be there for our patients. And the error for comp the room for complications there, we can't have mistakes, right? It's very similar to football, in which I really enjoyed that aspect. We have a we call them MEs, mental errors. If we have an ME on football, somebody scores a touchdown, right? And what's the NFL and a lot of football organizations always do is it was very closely to the military, closely related to the military. And the military guys, some of the higher ups would come and speak to the football team all the time, and they would put things in perspective for us. A mistake in the military, unfortunately, somebody dies. A mistake in the NFL, somebody scores a touchdown. A mistake in surgery, somebody, it could be catastrophic. as well, right?
Yep.
So I'm trying to take that same concept, and mistakes are going to happen, but how do we prepare for them? How do we handle them? And as you say, the SUSARs or the SAEs, these are things that we treat very, very seriously, and we put that same level of attention to detail in those things to mitigate that.
I just last week told my staff, I use football analogies all the time. We can't fumble the bag right now. We're doing good. Don't fumble the bag. Darshan Kulkarni, my fraud pod co-host, scared the shit out of me. All right. He told me he read this warning letter to me on like live. You can see my reactions live. This site, you know how sites delegate everything. So this MA who was acting as a blinded pharmacist, which we've done too, 10 times dosed. Like they made a mistake on preparing the IP and they overdosed a pediatric child 10 times the dose. So that's an example of like related to what you're saying. Like that is a mistake that could be life or death. Thankfully, not even an AE occurred. Like the kid was resilient, or maybe it was placebo. Hopefully that was placebo, but
right.
That's an example. And I have personally, thankfully, not similar stories. I have one when I first started out that's a horrible mistake I made, but nothing happened. But these things are very like likely to occur if you don't watch what you're doing. And there's a lot of sites and PIs, unfortunately, that are not supervising properly or don't train. Like when we had a study like this, I made sure the day before the dose, I spent like 4 hours going through with the MA, like this is how you're gonna do it. Like you make sure that you follow exactly this way to make sure things like that don't happen. Because as long as we're not harming patients, like if that's our first rule, everything else I can deal with. Oh, you didn't enter data or you didn't answer a query fast enough. That's fine. You can recover from that. But you dose a patient like wrong, incorrectly, or God forbid, like 10 times where you're supposed to. You're not recovering from that, and you're not sleeping well at night. At least if you're a decent person, you're not sleeping well at night if you allowed that to happen.
Right.
Have you been able to get into studies similar to what you were doing with your med device sales?
Not yet. So I actually I have a couple of my PIs that are interested in devices. There was one that we were very close to landing for an otoscope. And unfortunately, my daughter was struggling with ear infections back to back to back. And this device would have been excellent for, but unfortunately, we didn't land that study. But we do have a desire to work in the device space.
Okay. So from how did the transition from device sales to research, or was there something else between the?
So after the device sales, I went directly into exploring opportunities to, I looked all over. I searched all over for the right fit for me. I was presented with the opportunity for a partnership, and I looked at, it was a research site that I had the opportunity to partner with and open my own site with their leadership and guidance. And I began to learn the process from top down, how to be a research coordinator, how to be an owner, how to be a medical assistant in the process, and just kind of learn everything.
So you started CRC too.
I did. I worked on a couple studies as well.
Man, that's a good title too. I'm trying to think of a catchy title. Retired millionaire linebacker.
Easy now. Hundredaire.
Does coordinating. Wow.
Yeah.
Was that, how long did you, what was the coordinating experience like for you? Like how did you do
it was
that?
Good. So for me, I want to say my sales background, it kicks in, right? And there's so many aspects of being a sales rep, especially the fact that we were clinical. Prior to going into the surgeries, I was responsible for going to the doctor's office, and we'd have to review films and images. So we'd look at x-rays, MRIs, CTs. We'd come up with the game plan. So we were very clinical with what we did. So taking that same approach and putting it into the research coordinator, there were things like, for example, a patient would come in with a motion sickness study that I was coordinating on. Patient would come in and medical records was a hard thing for them. I witnessed the research coordinator go, hey, okay. They would take that and make that the responsibility of the patient versus, hey, listen, we don't have any other patients the rest of the day. Let's hop on the phone. with your PCP right now. Let's put the phone on speaker. Let's call them and let's get the ball rolling. Let's get these things. So just being able to troubleshoot, because as I mentioned, the end goal for me is to help these patients in somehow, some fashion. My end goal was I knew I wanted to be a site owner. How do I train my staff to navigate these little nuances to help ensure success, right? And something as simple as helping this patient get the medical records and providing them with the fax number or asking them to go pick them up, coordinating these things, making the burden a little easier for them so that they would be more interested in coming to this to actually randomize or be a part of the study.
Yeah, retention's so important. It's always interesting how, because it's similar to me, when I started coordinating, I was thrown into it. And then the business, my dad was like one of five doctors. I thought I was going to med school, man. Like my grades were not good enough. But my dad was with a group of like six doctors, five or six. They spun off of USC because they couldn't do studies there. And they convinced my dad to do it. And somehow he ended up being the PI. And he knew like the least maybe about research. He hired coordinators. He told me to come intern there so it looks good on my med school resume. So during my internship, things fell apart, like payroll. People missed payroll. Coordinators just walked out. And all they had me do was buy dry ice and get like snacks for the patients. So I didn't really know much about what I was doing. And I had to like learn the research like almost overnight because there was like no staff left during my tenure. Like everyone just left. The person who was in charge was stealing money, as is actually not very uncommon in our industry if you don't watch what's going on. Like people will take advantage of you. So I had to learn, but it's always interesting to me because I see it now with like people I interview. When you know in your head, hey, I'm going to be a site owner, it looks like. For me, it was like, I doubt I'm going to get into med school. I better learn this stuff or else I'm going to be a monitor somewhere.
Right.
You approach the mundane tasks of coordinating religiously, like as opposed to someone you hire, maybe they're just going through the motions. You approach it like from a different mentality. And it sounds like that's what you did too. Like you, it's always interesting to see the work ethic of the people that know why they're doing something, right? And there's a higher purpose as opposed to, oh, I'm just doing this to get a paycheck.
And you just said it right, knowing the why behind it, right? Like their pay is going to be the same if this patient comes back next time or if they doesn't, if they don't. And I remember I watched one of your podcasts with, you know, and have to be very careful with using the word incentivizing, but like, how do we make our employees passionate about what they're doing? I'm really, really fortunate to have the staff that I have. I have my doctors, one of my sub-investigators / site administrator. We're devoting personal time on weekends. No one's being paid for this. We're doing community outreach. We've done six events this year. I've had multiple doctors and staff there, and nobody's being paid for it. It's because they believe in what we're doing. They see the big picture. I've been able to project to them what the end goal is, and they've bought into the mission, and we stand very strong on that.
Yeah, that I want to get into your current clinic. I know like the transition between like you learning, you know, the X's and O's of being a coordinator with the end goal of knowing I'm going to own my site. I know you got into like particularly bad business arrangement and you were able to get out of. I was in several myself. It happens. Unfortunately, I have a theory about why that happens seemingly more in research. When there's a lack of transparency in like how things work, the people who know the information, like if you know more than someone else, you're in a position to be able to take advantage of them. And unfortunately, there's a lot of clouds and obscurity around what we do. But maybe without focusing very much time on that, because you have a really good clinic and seems like a really good setup, can you just kind of talk about lessons learned from your partnership that didn't work well and what others can avoid? Maybe I'm really hoping others listening, watching can learn, hey, I remember Keon said this, maybe I'm not going to do that.
Character, right? Like that's the biggest thing. I have this saying, do the right thing when no one's watching. And that's the type of people I want to be around. Take your shopping cart back, Every time. I don't care if it's raining.
Shopping cart test.
Right? Like do the right thing when no one's watching. These are things that have been ingrained in me since I was a boy, and oftentimes I'm let down because other people weren't held to that same standard. Other people don't align with that. But to speak on the business arrangement and things to just be cautious of, you hit it right on the head. When someone knows that they have a skill to offer, character is at test now, right? Their character is being tested because are they going to be transparent? Are they going to be upfront? Are they going to show the best intentions in these scenarios? So unfortunately, that wasn't the case with me. There were some things where greed got involved, and we know money is the root of all evil. And it's unfortunate because we're in an industry where we're trying to give back, or we're trying to do what's right for individuals, but we also have a living to make on top of that. So
Yeah.
that's understandable. So there was a verbal agreement in place. Things are moving very quickly. I had some personal timelines that I needed to meet to get things done, and it caused me to move a little quicker than I should have. And that being said, I personally secured a building. First thing I can say is, any young person starting out, if you the less you can put in your personal name, the better. Just, I mean, we don't plan on abandoning ship. We hope we don't have to abandon ship, but it's the same thing. It's kind of like a prenup, right? It's in place to protect you, and we will take the personal feelings out of it. And let's think from a business standpoint. The less you can personally guarantee, the better off you are, because you have to plan for that rainy day. We know that everything isn't guaranteed. I've met individuals who started their research sites who thought they would be killing it, but there's just like, hey man, you entered the research at one of the roughest periods that it's been in a very, very long time. So the success that you anticipated isn't necessarily there. So the first thing I would say is be careful with personally guaranteeing. Second thing I would say is watch all Dan's podcast, because you
Thank
clearly stated it. As I'm watching these podcasts, I'm like, I didn't do that, and I'm
you.
feeling the pain, right? I'm feeling it. The method that you teach to open up your site, if possible, within a existing physician's office, hands down the way to go. But you got to make sure you have the right doctor on board. Like it's a right fit for everything, and I'm a firm believer in faith, and if it's meant to be, it'll work out for you in that manner. So personally guaranteeing things, cautious on your overhead, and network, network, network.
I'm glad you're saying it, man, because people are tired of hearing it from me. But that personal guarantee stuff, I learned the hard way. This is not from theories from books. Like, your story gave me a little PTSD with that personal guarantee. I got myself into some hot water back in 2011, 2012, probably the worst years of my life. I mean, I had like hypertension as a 29-year-old, which was not supposed to happen because of things I didn't do. And that's the thing people don't understand about entrepreneurs. Like, you're living your career. Like, the results can sometimes be manifested physically, just like football. Like, the injuries you get, hopefully you didn't have any. You carry those with you the rest of your life, right? Same thing with, I've got hypertension now. I got to take lisinopril still, even though things are seemingly good because of that. Because getting into some shit and, that personal liability, I had to find a way to sublease it. And man, that gave me a little PTSD, but I hope people can learn from that. And that's where a lot of the stuff comes from in my pods. It's like, I did this, don't do it. We can have a whole series on what not to do. Maybe people learn better that way.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, creating your site seems like, from what you just said, seems like you got the right team. Can you kind of walk us through like the structure of who you have, what kind of therapeutic areas you guys do, and the staff and how that's evolved?
Okay, so I have five and a half physicians. I have another physician he's a big piece of the puzzle right now. He's an asthma immunologist. I'm not that hopefully he doesn't see this, but he is so meticulous. It's a very slow moving process with him. And at the end of the day, I look at it from a protection standpoint. Like just like I sit down with my accountant or my financial planner, and it's protection first. Before we do anything, it's protection first. And that's his mindset. He actually is a asthma immunologist with a MBA in business. So the reason he's moving at the pace he is and going over the protection aspect, it's only making it better for all my other PIs at our site. That being said, we are a standalone research site. We have 2,500 square foot facility. We're completely outfitted with all features that you need, minus 20, minus 80 centrifuge scales, you name it. Exam rooms, designated coordinator area, PI room, conference room for monitoring, completely outfitted. I have two internal meds. One is a geriatrician, one is a sports medicine. I have a dermatologist. I have a psychologist
Wow,
and
you're
the
pretty
asthma.
diversified.
Yeah, so we have quite the team. As far as guys with extensive experience, two of my guys have very extensive research experience. Everyone else, I'm trying to build the pieces of the puzzle either by getting them sub-I experience or having them. I have a mentor here in Tampa who has two research sites, and I'm trying to get them. We've trying to take in like a backdoor route to build their CVs where we can have them assist on studies. So in their free time, while studies are going on, they go to my mentor site and they're able to shadow this research or this PI. And then hopefully we can finagle that on their CVs and get credibility
I
as
see.
research experience.
Okay.
Yes. So that was
It
something
sounds
my
like
mentor.
the multi-therapeutic thing is awesome because it gives you freedom in the sense of sometimes certain therapeutic areas get cold and then you gotta wait a few years till they get hot again. Sometimes you gotta wait a decade till they get hot again, but as long as you always have something going. Like right now, psych is keeping my site busy. And respiratory is about to come up. So I think you and I need a network off air because I love coast to coast networking because we're not competing and like I'm always looking for new sites to share study leads with. I know we have a consulting firm that helps sites get studies, but I'm actually not running that. I'm a client of it myself. So we have people running it. And I'm always looking to share leads. So if you're interested in that, just let me know and we'll
Absolutely. I'd love
sounds
to
like we have
talk.
similar therapeutic areas. Your pulmonologist reminds me of my psychiatrist. My psychiatrist, who's the third PI I got here, they all have their different quirks, man. My psychiatrist, I love him. He will not refer us patients unless the patient asks him about research. So he's like, I was like, hey man, can we get access to the records? All the PIs usually say yes. This guy says no. He says, listen, I don't even ask them about research. You can put videos in the waiting room, flyers, but he respects their privacy so much, their PHI, and I actually respect that about him. But he's like very guarded when it comes to that. But if a patient asks him, then he'll right away text me their info. Okay, they want to do it, but he won't do it first, and he takes that very seriously. And then we have others that are like, yeah, just log in and go have at it. It's like the spectrum is crazy as far as like the different personalities you have to manage. Probably not unlike a coach on a football team, maybe. Keep going back to these analogies because it's so easy to make football analogies.
Absolutely.
How have you built your culture? Like you talked about people coming in working on the weekends. What kind of like how many coordinator? Well, your first coordinator. Was it you the being the first coordinator or
I am correct.
and you still are or no?
I'm so we don't have any
Ooh.
current studies at the moment. So I will serve as well as my site administrator. She will be our research coordinator. And we recently hired a third coordinator. with Bob. I mean, she's been in the industry since 2011, I think, 11 or 12. So she has a lot of research experience.
When I start in Tampa, you probably have like a talent pool to recruit of experienced staff. Here in Yuma, I mean, literally and figuratively, it's a desert. So we just go with MAs that have potential. And then we like the sad thing is when you train them, they try to get recruited. People try to recruit them away. And usually it's in my case, it's like University of Arizona or ASU with like double the pay. There's every site has their own unique challenges. Have you experienced any challenges yet as far as like resources or managing the staff?
So as you just mentioned, I actually just we were in feasibility for a psychosis associated with Alzheimer's study, and
Those
the
are tough.
I know I know we were speaking with a rater and just trying to have backup raters in addition to our staff, so we're still keeping the door open and networking, and we met with a site owner who's actually a raider as well. And he was explaining some of the troubles and adversities that he's faced, being that he's been in research for a number of years. And he was able to explain the Tampa market in detail with me. And it's a game of jumping ship for $2 or $3. A lot of so he works his research site is owned by a physician group, and there's dozens and dozens of physicians in that group. And there's a lot of competition in the area. So these people will get offered $4 or $5, but all the managing partners were very stubborn and they wouldn't budge on it. So he's saying cost to hire a new person versus posting ads, all the interviewing plus training, give them the extra $4 or $5. And that's a valuable lesson, right? Like, I don't need to know that this, you, I don't have to touch that stove to know it's hot. I learn, right? I'm in the process of learning. So if I get to a point where I have a research coordinator who's obviously worth it and has the skill set that I need, and they've been on board and performing well, I'll gladly give that pay bump.
Yeah. How do you manage the staff? Like, what kind of a manager are you? You seem like pretty laid back, but also about your business.
Right. So my thing is I want you to want to be here. That's the biggest thing. I don't want this
That's
to
tough,
just
man.
right.
Sometimes we don't want to be there.
My goal, right? I'll set goals for the team, and on our vision board is I want to take the entire team on a cruise. We're here in Florida, maybe take families to Disney. I want to be able to do something that's inclusive for the entire team where we get to celebrate our big wins. We have weekly meetings to set the tone for the week. What patients do we have coming in? What does this look like? What studies do we have? What does our pipeline look like? Who's responsible for carrying out? So basically just doing a bunch of goal setting, managing expectations, ensuring that we're compliant, answering queries, whatever that may be, we handle with our weekly meetings. We also have a suggestion box. My business partner and I came up with this. It's a cute little box that we have, and we set it kind of in the middle of the facility. And you can pull a sticky note, and if at any point in time something's bothering you, something's on your mind, you can put a suggestion. You can put this note in the suggestion box, and you either address it with myself or we address it at the next team meeting. So non-personal, no one's being attacked, nothing confrontational. Give it time to cool down. If it's something I need to give you a call about on your drive home in your safe space, let's address these things. I want
Are
you
they anonymous sometimes, or is your staff
to. They
like
can be.
small enough where you could tell who it is?
They can be. I mean, I know handwriting at this point.
That managing people is one of the toughest things, man. I don't care what business. It boils down to personality. It boils down if you're trying to get people to do what they don't want to do, you know, and this is where the stage we're at right now in my site. We have five coordinators, an admin, raters, PI. But really, it's the coordinators. And one of them, Katie Welch, who's been with me for 2.5 years almost, is the lead CRC. And she's like 23, and she's in charge of managing the staff, but I'm like the site director. So when it boils down, it's always tough to get someone to do something that they don't want to do, and you wouldn't want to do it either. Not that I haven't done it, because anything I ask them to do, I've done already. I think it's important to have a leader, and this is why I give you props for doing the coordinating. It's always funny to me how some organizations hire, even in our own industry, they hire people that have never done something to manage others to do it. It's like, if you're in charge of a cavalry and you've never ridden a horse, like, you might jump on it backwards. Like, you might climb it backwards and face the other way, like face towards the ass of the horse instead of going forward. That helps. But even then, those day-to-day, like, hey, did you answer queries? Did you, how come you didn't do this? Like, I haven't found a way outside of like one-on-ones. My thing is one-on-ones with each person, and we're small enough to where I can do that. And I don't care if it's every day I'm there. I'm gonna meet with you 10 minutes, 15, just private. How's it going? One thing I started doing recently, I saw people are like ignoring their emails. So I bring them in one at a time. Bring your laptop. Let's go through your email. And if I see stuff bold, meaning they haven't clicked, I'm like, well, what's, how come you're not clicking this? Like, what's going on? Do you need an admin? And usually, like, there's an answer, something about, they can justify it to some extent. But the point of all this is there's so many possibilities of like not doing every part of your job the way you should be, managing that without being a micromanager, because I hate micromanaging.
The hard
It's
part,
almost impossible, man. So whenever I get a site owner, I try to get like ideas from them. But what are, besides that suggestion box, which is not a bad one, what are some things that have worked for you?
so I'll just touch on the coach thing, right? Like the type of leader that you are. There's been, like, for example, I'll say I don't even use football. I ran track in high school, and it irked my nerves so bad to see my coach driving in the car while we were running, right? He would literally be driving and barking orders like, "Faster, you're behind." I was like,
Was he
it would
honking?
come like it would come across so much better, like if you were running next to us, right? Like if you were in the trenches with us. So like we'll switch it to football, right? So I'll use the Steelers, Dick LeBeau, one of the Hall of Famer, right? One of the best safeties to ever play the game. He's the coach, he's the defensive coordinator. So if this guy's telling me how to do something, he's done it. He knows how to do it, and he knows how it should be done. I'm all ears, right? So that's why I'm taking the position of being an active part in the research, where I don't want to just be barking orders. Like, I've done it. Here's how my experiences have allowed me to have success. Let me show you how I do it, and you formulate a way that works for you. That's the biggest thing. Like, if I can show you, like, I've done it, as well as manage multiple things. How do you get people to be passionate about something? It's a slippery slope, right? My biggest thing, it's like, unfortunately, it's like parenting a little bit. It's like, how do I make it your idea? That's the biggest thing. If I can take
Reverse
it,
psychology.
how do I make these things your idea, right? We know this is the list of things, right? We're gonna do, for me, I'm at the gym and I'm working out. My left side is stronger than my right side. I'm gonna do my weak side first. So the things you hate doing the most, we're going to do those things first while you're the freshest, while you have the mental capacity. So all the things that you like, man, I really don't like doing this, we're going to tackle that first. And then we kind of go down the pecking order. So the things you like the most, put it at the end of the list, because you can do it with your eyes closed, right? Obviously, we're going to still double check everything and make sure it's correct, but let's do the most difficult, cumbersome thing first, get it off the list, and you'll lighten the load. It'll make you more exciting. It'll make everything more enjoyable, because you're fresher, you have the mental capacity, and it's something you enjoy towards the end. So that way you're not really working, you're just doing what you do best.
Yeah, I think that's actually not bad advice. I try to find where my staff, everyone has different strengths. And like one is really good at community outreach. I mean, she knows everyone in Yuma. I joke around with her that she's the mayor of Yuma, but she's also coordinator, right? And then the other one's really good at like QA. Like his mind is built for systems and seeing how things operate. The other one loves social media. I told her to start doing our TikTok for our site. You got to find ways to make it like part of what their affinities are. but also bringing it back to being coordinator. And we're not at the point yet where everyone's specialized in different things. I'm debating that actually about, because we're not even separating studies amongst coordinators, right? Everyone, we have like eight studies, so everyone's kind of working on all of them. But there's issues with that because human beings like to hide from struggle, like myself included. If you send a group email to all your staff, someone please do this, and no one's really in charge of that study. I mean, what are you gonna do? What am I gonna do? Unless I'm trying to impress someone, if it's just day to day, I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna wait for someone else to answer. Or maybe they already did that. Why would I do it? You know, it's just easier. And I think you reach a size at your site where you need to start dividing who's responsible for what so you can't hide. And I actually think I'm at that stage now. But that's like 3 years in. So it becomes interesting how to manage a site as the site grows. It's very different than when we started. And it probably 3 years from now, it's going to be very different than what it looks like now. And it's always changing, man. Like, you know, I know these site owners that are like, okay, I figure it out. I'm just going to kick back now and the site's going to run itself. No, it's not. There's something called entropy. The natural way of the universe is disorder. If you don't apply energy to it, it's a disorder. Your site is not immune to the laws of physics.
Absolutely. So one thing you mentioned is like you say you send that group email, and obviously I don't know the nuances and details of your business, but if everyone's being paid the same rate, then I think that'd be applicable, right? Like, hey, who's available to do this? But if someone has more experience, more time, more anything, I'm going to delegate that opportunity. I'm going to delegate that task.
Yeah.
And then we call it like I get in a situation. And it's over my head. I'm gonna punt the ball, right? Like that. So I'm gonna specifically, it's third and nine, and I throw the ball to this person. If this person can't handle that, they punt the ball, and then we recover, and now it's a new turn, right? So I would simply, instead of putting it out there, hey, who wants to volunteer? Nobody wants to volunteer. No, I have enough, right? Like,
Yeah.
and understanding what people's thresholds are, and understanding how this person can do very well with this task, and then I'm starting to notice that they're later or they're a little more grumpy when I put this on them. Cater it to their weaknesses, find out what their strengths are, what are they passionate about, and find a way to delegate that.
Yeah, delegate. I think that's the key, is really delegating and knowing, like you said, punting. Sometimes there's been studies that we've turned down now that I look at it and I'm like, there's no way we're gonna do this. And I joke with the staff. I said, hey, good thing I'm a cool site owner, because some of them will take this study and not care about you. But I know this study looks like a nightmare, right? And one, I think it was a Chinese proverb that said, of all the 36 alternatives, sometimes the best one is to run away. Like, that's just the quickest. That's like punting, right? Yeah, let's punt this.
Exactly.
But there, you have site owners that don't give a shit, man, and they just load their staff with work. They don't care, and then they're surprised when their staff leaves or finds another job, which the turnover in this industry is real. So that becomes another thing when it comes to managing your site is training. It's not like coordinators grow on trees. I know in Tampa it's more common to have a trained coordinator, but sometimes the experienced one come with their own baggage too that
Absolutely.
may not be good for the site either.
I'll share with you one of the things that we have going on as well. I mean, you mentioned it. You say you typically grab MAs, but we've actually put like a title to it. So we have a nonprofit that aligns with our research site, and we use this opportunity to. So we're a resource hub. We serve as a resource hub, and all patients that come into our sites, they have a 15-minute window at the end of their visit where they get to sit down with myself, and they can express any insecurities or needs that they may have, whether they have a grandparent that they're caring for that needs additional assistance. We have relationships with
Wait,
long-term.
wait, wait. Hold on. At the end of every visit, you meet with every patient one-on-one?
Their first visit.
Oh, their first visit. Well, even that.
Yes.
Man, that should be on your business card. Like, wow, Keon, no kidding.
And then we can open up our resource hub to them, whatever situations they may have, if they have food insecurities, because we originally thought we wanted to be a food pantry, but luckily we got talked out of that. Because the key advice was like you will become a crutch and not an actual providing actual assistance. A lot of people become dependent on that. So now we've partnered with Feeding Tampa Bay, and we simply are able to make a phone call and individuals can go and pick that up. If it's transportation assistance that they're looking for, if it's back to school drives, or if it's weight management, one of our physicians, he takes a little bit of the holistic approach, and he has dietitian notes that he's drawn out, like food options, better solutions, good, better, best options for them to eat, just food knowledge, and basically being able to be this resource to these individuals is something that we've incorporated. And part of that is all the relationships that we've made, they all kind of go under this nonprofit umbrella. And what we do is we have a step-up program. And part of that step-up program, as you mentioned, is individuals get to start out as a medical assistant, very much like you did, right? Running to get dry ice and coming back to the facility and bringing drinks and snacks to everybody, whatever.
McDoubles, $1 McDoubles feed a lot of patients, man.
I don't think they're a dollar in Tampa. Our
Not
inflation's like
anymore. Not.
That being said, we have the step-up program where they start out as a medical assistant and then they can become a research assistant and then eventually a research coordinator. We have I'll use the best organization. They are a really, really cool organization here in Tampa that it's a really exciting opportunity that I'm at liberty to speak about. I'm actually a champion. I'll be inducted as a champion for the organization. They have been around for 20 years. The main goal, what they are doing is any children or young adults with aspirations of doing anything healthcare related, they are provided summer internships. So if they want to be a doctor, a nurse, a scrub tech, an X-ray technologist, whatever it may be, they have relationships with all the local hospitals and they get to actually get hands-on shadowing experiences with these doctors or nurses or whatever that specific skill that they want. That being said, they have a mentorship program where I am able to utilize these students and train them in the summers. They can come over for a couple months. I can utilize them and build their CVs. We know the research industry is so backwards. Everybody wants experience to get a job, but nobody's willing to give experience to get a job. So we're trying to allow some of these young adults to get the research experience, put it on their resumes or CVs, and be able to enter the research industry down the line. The big picture is, so there's the organization is 20 years old. They currently have students that have gone from middle school to high school into college and now are currently serving as doctors. They have statistics where they have, I want to say, it's like the 1,500 students have gone through the program, over 300 doctors, hundreds of nurses, like three attorneys that are practicing medical law. That being
Future
said,
Darshan. Darshan got competition.
one of the things that they are our big picture that we're looking to do is it's a long-term play, but we want to have a one-stop shop where we open up research as a part of it. We'll have all of our in-house doctors, we'll have all of our in-house staff, we'll have our own research facility, and we can pull everything from there. And on top of that, they have all of the physicians have their databases. They also have a medical clinic associated with it with several doctors, and it'll just be one entire organization where
So
we're
you're
doing that.
planning on integrating this with your
Yes.
what was
Research Hub.
sorry, what was the name of
Sunshine.
this Sunshine?
Yes.
That's awesome, man. I might need a intro to that group so we can interview them for Latinos in clinical research. We're always looking for like innovative ways to mentor people. We would love to talk to them and just kind of see what they've done. But
Okay.
the fact that you meet with every patient, man, like I remember the days where I could do that, and now we joke around the office like I don't even know the patients who they are. Like, I hear them talking amongst themselves, the coordinators. I'm like, yeah, I don't know who that is, but they're like saying stuff about the patients. I kind of feel left out, but I've learned that in order to take care of the patients best, I need to empower the coordinators to do it because we're doing like five, six visits a day, so it'd be Hard. I guess it wouldn't be impossible, but how do you do that? Like, was that your idea to do that every screening?
It is so
That's crazy, man.
whether it can be in person or it can be virtually prior to them coming into the site, there's ways to get creative around doing it. We've had patient interactions at this point, and I'm sure it's going to be a point where I'll outgrow it, and then I'll find a way to delegate that job to either another research coordinator. But we want to be family. We want these patients come in for several consecutive visits. Our research coordinators, I won't say any names, they love to talk. They love to invest themselves within these patients, and we want to work together for the long haul, right? We
What
want
does
the
that conversation look like? Like, is it after the screening? Like,
So after the screening, it'd be like they'd sit down. Thank you for coming in today. How's life at home? What's going on? What areas are you struggling in? What's your living arrangements? What's your transportation services?
wow, okay.
Just how can we be of a resource to you? And then we tell them about our community events that we have coming up. Then they can come and get free health screenings, and they can come and get free food. So at our health events where we host our events, we'll do cookouts and barbecues, and we'll pass out marketing materials. We'll let them know about currently enrolling studies.
Wow. I'm sure
Another
not
thing.
everyone, I'm sure not every patient, because then I'm trying to think of our patient, like, depend on the study. Yuma's very diverse in the sense of, like, we'll have like low, very low income and then pretty well off people. But I feel like you can just have a conversation as a human being with all of them. But some of the patients, especially the more well off ones, they'd be like, leave me alone. Some don't even want to get paid. They're like, what do you mean pay? I don't want the money. And I'm like, no, I have to give it to you.
One of the things that another thing that's different, like when dealing with these patients, just understanding where they are and being able to meet them where they are. That's the biggest part. Sometimes they're going to be like, absolutely. Like some of them, quite frankly, they're doing it for the money, right? Like majority of them, they're doing it for the money. So being able to read the crowd, right? Just using your experience. If someone, hey, all right, I gotta go, or yeah, let's keep this short, let's keep it brief. Hey, I just want to be able to offer this resource to you. And it's these resources they aren't only like our network isn't only for underserved people. This best organization with these children that are having the opportunity to mentor, a lot of their parents are doctors, a lot of their parents are lawyers, a lot of the, so it's not necessarily coming from an underserved aspect. It's just how do you find out about this organization if you don't hear about it? They're not marketing it on TV. They're not marketing it. They're not taking out newspaper ads. So our resource hub is more than just serving the underserved. We can help advance your kids for future healthcare aspirations,
Wow,
right?
no, it's a really good service, man. Yeah, because community outreach often gets mixed in with underserved, and it's not the case. Like you're saying, it's not always the case, nor is it the purpose. It's just being a staple in your community, I think, is one of the few things we still have left as every business is becoming virtual. I don't know what your thoughts are on decentralized trials and trying to go straight to patients' homes and bypass the sites, but you're going to miss out on all these opportunities, like all these little intangibles of what you're doing, kind of what I'm doing, although not to that level. It's more like artisan approach. Like, it's not, there's certain things you do for the goodwill itself and not for a business
Not
reason.
the
And
ROI.
I think that as more PE private equity gets involved, the less of those opportunities there are and the more valuable they become, because it's like, well, this is different. Like, if this business actually went away, the community would actually not like it. And there's not too many businesses that could say that to where the community could give a shit if your business went away.
Absolutely. One more thing I want to share with you about our site is we have a dedicated childcare area.
Ooh, okay.
Just trying to be inclusive and encourage longevity throughout a trial.
On
We
site? You have the on site?
on site. So it's actually about 1,000 square foot that's untouched at our facility right now. And
Wow.
we have capabilities to go either vaccine route, go phase one down the road. So like we have the space, I'm paying for it. Let's utilize it. So at this point, we have the our medical assistants are able to provide temporary childcare. And as mentioned, we are in feasibility for this pediatric asthma study. So kids are going to come, they're not going to want to sit down this whole time, right? So we have educational toys, books, TV mounted on the wall, all types of, you name it. It's a beautiful area we have set up for the kids, and the parents can be there. We have snacks, drinks, just being inclusive and accommodating to the
Wow.
patients.
The only reason I didn't do that, and I just the other day I saw a patient coming with their kid, and it was fine. We welcome that, but we don't have like a dedicated area. But they were with the coordinator in a private room, just going through the consent and the screening, and the kid was like a toddler. And I remember when they were walking out, turned out it was a screen fail, but it kind of like crossed my mind. All right, what are we actually doing besides just letting them accompany the parent? How the reason I've shied away from that is there like liability issues with that, or like what do you need extra
So
insurance or
for
something?
us, it's not childcare. That's the biggest thing. We're not providing childcare. It's just a play area, right? So the
Okay.
parents are, so if it's the pediatric study, the parents are there with the kid the whole time.
Okay.
They're
So
in
no
the building.
special license or anything like that.
Not here in Florida, no.
I gotcha. Yeah, probably here in Arizona either. Okay. I would just be worried, like something, the kid gets hurt. I'm sure you
Absolutely.
are too. Like,
Absolutely. I don't want something good to turn into our worst nightmare.
Judy does that too. Judy Galindo in Imperial Valley, 40 minutes from here. She has a play area for the kids. It's something to look into for sure. Because, well, that's awesome. I'm learning a bunch of stuff from you, Keon. What's the goals for? I know you have the nonprofit that you guys are all trying to like integrate. I see the big vision. What's the goal? Like, let's say the next year, the next 3 years, the next five for you.
For us, the goal, we have numbers that we're obviously looking to obtain. The biggest goal is to be able to allow our community outreach efforts to be so strong that it cuts the burden of recruitment. And I want to keep that at the forefront of what we do to ease. So I'll mention couple other collaborations that we have. Dr. Kevin Snead of the University of South Florida. I attended the University of South Florida here in
Ah,
Tampa.
okay.
He's a dean of pharmacy at the school. Very, very powerful man. They have the Bird Institute, which is associated with the University of South Florida. They had a mobile unit. This mobile unit is 10, 15 years old at this point, and it's outdated. Dr. Snead has the We Care Foundation, and they are in the process of purchasing that unit, and they're going to rewrap it. He's already in contact. He has two pharmaceutical companies that's agreed to sponsor the reconstruction and wrapping of this. They are committed to doing 18 events a year where, along with myself and other community partners, we'll be able to go into the community and offer research, offer patient recruitment, offer patient screenings. The bus will be set up for health screening. So if we did get to a point where we were doing decentralized trials, that would be the opportunity for us. But we have this relationship in place. So there's so many different avenues on how we're attacking this and going in as a unit and working towards getting to our numbers. But the main goal is to ease the burden and not have to tap into so many resources for patient recruitment. If we could
Yeah.
have, if we could centralize this aspect and simply grow our database within our, just from our community outreach, and we can strategically market these events, whatever study we have, we can market alongside the We Care organization to get that patient population out. Obviously, it's never going to be that one-stop shop, but if we can just kind of streamline that process, that's the goal.
That's a very aspirational goal, and I think if you can pull that off, you're creating a lot of value in the space. Speaking of systems, I told you this interview could go 3 hours, man. We're gonna do a Joe Rogan style interview one of these days, but what kind of systems do you guys use? Like, do you have any eSource or eReg or like any tech that you use that you're particularly impressed with?
At the moment, we are paper. just to work through things, if that makes sense. We
You get more
want,
control over paper.
and that's the main reason we're doing it. We've interviewed, I want to say, every company there is. I've attended several conferences. I've sat down and spoke with almost every CTMS there is. We have someone in mind. We are also part of an alliance that is trying to work a deal with clinically.
Okay.
So in the alliance, they are hoping to maybe land that. I think they are offering like a year free through the alliance. So
Wow.
we'll see if that works out, see how that works out.
Free is always good. Yes. That is an area of research that, like the tech side, I'm seeing a lot of activity, and ultimately, tech is like a deflationary force. So it's good for us site owners because cost of all this stuff's coming down. Like we started our Patient Ace, which is a recruitment portal. If you're interested, let me know. But with Ronick, who's a site owner in North Carolina, we're undercutting prices because it lets you do that. Like the tech becomes a deflationary force. So the established players, in order to compete, either they create more products and people still pay, or they have to lower prices. And generally, it's both. They add more and prices come down. So it's like the sites win in the long run, basically. But the tech vendors are trying to come in and establish themselves and get the bag before the party's over. And a lot of venture capital and PE firms are in this too. So always interested to hear about that. Can we get you at SOS this year, Keon? We missed you last year, man.
You guys sold out before it was even posted.
Tucson is hard to get to, man. From I picked it because that's my alma mater, U of A, but this year is not that much easier. Oklahoma City, a little bit easier to get to, but we're gonna get you
Love
there. Yeah.
to.
Okay, man. Well, everyone, go connect with Keon. Anything else you want to mention?
I think I covered everything.
We'll try to share some study leads offline. There's always site owners I'm looking for, especially in Florida. LinkedIn to Keon's. LinkedIn is underneath the video or in the show notes if you're listening. Thank you so much, Keon. I really appreciate it. Could have easily been 3 hours, but we got stuff to do too, man.
Thank you so much, Dan.
Like,
I appreciate the
subscribe,
time.
comment, share. Go follow him right now. Bye bye.